the Edge with April Mahoney Brains. Here, this is the place where the conversation is pointed, the guests are sharp, and the responses are never dull. Welcome home, Brains.
Coming to you straight from San Diego, California, let's welcome our host, April Mahoney.
And so every 6 weeks I go see her and she makes me look very spectacularly. This is all washed out now. I'm actually due to go back in about 2 weeks, I think. So when I get it done, it's bright blue, bright pink, bright purple.
And so what brings you joy about all these bright colors on your hair? Why do you like to do that?
Every time I get my hair done like that, it just lifts me up.
Yeah.
I leave the hairdresser and I'm going, oh, I just feel so bright and brilliant. It just feels amazing. And then it sort of like goes to these really soft, but now it's really pastel.
Mm-hmm.
But it's still pretty. I still like it, even though it's like pastel.
Now, your hair salons, I see, are open there in Australia. They're closed here in the United States. They were trying to gradually open them up. So I can't imagine somebody with gray roots and they couldn't get their hair pink or purple. I mean, what in the world?
Yeah, they're coming through.
Does the color in your hair, it doesn't strip it? It's a washout, like a vegetable type of dye color, or it's a semi-permanent?
Semi-permanent. So she has to bleach my hair first and then put the really, because they're such like vibrant hot colors, it has to sort of like bleach out sort of thing. Like now that it's like this, it mm-hmm. doesn't, like she can just put the colors over the top and it sort of like molds in, and then she just does the roots, and then the roots go nice and bright and everything.
Now, girl, do you have to get a hot oil treatment too? Because, you know, color sometimes can really strip the moisture out of your hair. Do you ever get hot oil treatments?
I don't have to. Like, I just use, I just condition my hair probably 3 times a week.
Oh, okay. Okay. Well, when I want some color in mine, girl, I just slip me on a hair option. You know, I have a regular, I have an afro. But if I want pink or purple or whatever, I just plop on a wig.
I like that idea.
Exactly. I love the idea of having you here on the Edge with me. Good morning, Brains. It's 5:30 in the morning for me, and it is 9:30 in the evening for our guest right there, Paula Darche. And she is a healer. She's a mother that has really kind of worked through some trauma with her and her son. And she is here to give us insight and tell us what's going on in the land down under. So help me welcome her to the Edge today. Hello, Paula, and welcome to the Edge.
Hello, welcome. Thank you for having me.
Absolutely. The Brains need all the information they can get, and I love to give it to them globally. Tell my Brains a little bit about you and your story and how you became a healer.
So a little bit about me. I am a mum, as April just said. But my journey as being a mum was really challenging. I have a beautiful son. He is turning 23 this year. But our life together hasn't always been simple. It always hasn't always been nice. So when my son was 3 years old, I had a boyfriend, and my boyfriend abused my son. He abused him so much that he was actually hospitalized for a whole week, and he had a lot of injuries, which ended up causing somewhat of a permanent temporary brain delay. Because of that, our life together was, let's just say, very challenging, very hard. And he was always, it was hard work. But it was the outcome of all of that was the doctors, the schools, everyone just wanted to keep on diagnosing him with, you know, ADD and ADHD and conduct disorder and oppositional defiant disorder, PTSD, depression. That each one of those diagnoses actually made him more and more of those diagnoses, which actually made him worse. And so through all of that journeying together, I really lost me. And it wasn't until one specific day where I just couldn't do it anymore. I didn't want to do it anymore. And I was driving my son home from soccer, and I actually was about to drive him and me off the cliff.
Wow.
Because I couldn't handle the pain. I couldn't handle the trauma. I couldn't handle everything all the time. It just got to me. It just wore me down. Severe depression, anxiety. I just didn't want to live. But in that moment was my change. That was my catalyst to go, I have to change me, but because I can't change him.
Right. Now, let me ask you some real tough questions, because that's what we do here on The Edge, okay?
Yes.
Answer them to your comfort level. Did you feel a certain amount of guilt or responsibility because of you being in a relationship with someone that took advantage of your son?
Big time. I blamed myself. The guilt overrode me. To the stage of, you know, sort of wanting to end my life and his life, because I just had so much guilt and shame and blame, because to me, I brought this man into my son's life. I brought him into my life. It was the emotions that I had to fight all the time were really, really hard.
I know that can be difficult, because you really think that you're making a sound decision. There's no way in the world that I think that any mother would, hello all you mother brains, but I don't think that any mother would purposely and intentionally have someone in their life that would inflict harm on their child. And then when your child is subjected to that, that's a double-edged sword, because they're looking to you to be their protector. And why didn't you do this? And so, you know, why did this happen to me? So I can understand that there'd be a lot of trauma. Now, you have another son that's 13 years old, right?
I do, yes. Yes.
So what are some of the things that you incorporated in your learning and teaching as a parent, as a woman, that you do differently now than you did with your older son?
The biggest thing that I have done, and that was, I actually found me. That was my catalyst to change my whole entire world. I had to work through my emotions. I had to really move through the shame and the blame and the guilt and accept that what had happened to my son had happened, but it wasn't my fault, and to understand that it was a journey that we were on together. But, you know, I had to stop blaming myself. And so parenting my 13-year-old, I parent him so polar oppositely different, because I am not the same mum. I am not the same person as what I was when I had my first son.
Right.
When I had my first son, what I discovered with the abuse after the abuse had happened was that the reason behind why all that happened was because I hated myself. I had no self-esteem. I had no confidence. I didn't know who I was. Wow. So I was alone, and I attracted that man into my life and my son's life because I didn't want to be alone. And
the question, did you suffer any sort of trauma or mistreatment as a child?
No. No, but I grew up feeling alone. My parents loved me unconditionally, but my whole life I felt alone. I felt completely different to my family. Wow. They didn't treat me, you know, sort of badly, but I didn't feel that I belonged to my mum or my dad or my sister.
Wow. Yeah. And that just sprung up out of nowhere?
Yeah.
Wow. So I can see how you might have been in a vulnerable position. And when someone came at you and was, you know, throwing that charm and, you know, baby this and sweetie that and a little pinch here and all that, it could, you know, it could really turn you awry because, again, you're still naive and you're very tender. So now you're working with parents and you're really trying to help parents. Let me make sure that I get this right. Parenting from chaos, living with parental grief. Tell us a little bit about that.
So Parenting from Chaos to Freedom, Living with Parental Grief is my book that I have written that is about my story with my son. It's actually started off with my life in where I came and the fact that I so desperately wanted children, couldn't have children, or got told that after my first miscarriage that I couldn't have children. And then lo and behold, I landed up falling pregnant with my beautiful son and then going through the trauma and what have you. So this book is very much about my life, my story, where I came from to where I am today. And what I realized with going through everything that I was going through with my son was that there was a one big key factor that I had to actually acknowledge. And that was that I was grieving for the child that I so desperately wanted but didn't have. So parenting from chaos to freedom was me. I was parenting in complete and utter chaos with my child. But now I parent my son now, my youngest one, in freedom because I don't grieve for him. I don't grieve for even, you know, my adult son because I've actually moved through my grief of accepting that my son is who he is and who he was meant to be. Regardless of the trauma, regardless of the journey that we went through, every child that comes to this earth is on a journey. And us parents are not in control of that journey.
I know. You know, I had another great guest on. His name is Jay Westbrook. And he was locked in a closet for 3 years.
Years.
His parents had given him to, you know, others to raise. And they locked him in that closet. He ate, slept, and defecated in that closet, in that dark closet. They took him out to wash him, abuse him, and sexually assault him, and put him back in that closet. And I asked him, I said, how did you survive? How did you get through that? And he goes, April, I was made to suffer. So I totally connect with what you're saying with that grief, is that, you know, yes, it's a necessary evil. And it is hard for most people to comprehend, and it's even harder, I'm sure, to walk in those, you know, in those shoes. But to come out on the other side, to understand that grief is a reality, it is a process. Some experience it, you know, far more tragic than others. And then, you know, we have to be able to work with that. So what type of things do you help coach parents through that are dealing with this type of, you know, trauma?
So I really support the family as a unit. So I support the parents to accept that whatever their child is. So quite often, I know for me, every time that my son was diagnosed with another form of a diagnosis, then I felt that I was grieving for him all over again. So when parents find out that their children have gone through trauma or they have been diagnosed with a disability or something like that, then automatically, without knowing it, we start to grieve. We grieve for what we thought we were going to have. So what I do is I work with the parents to support them in actually moving through their grief. But the biggest thing is accepting the child they have for who the child is and the understanding that the child is on its own journey, and that, again, we can't control that journey. We can accept that journey. And when we start to move into acceptance of that child, this is where the change comes in us as parents, but also the child, because the child then goes, ah, they accept me for who I am, regardless of who I am. They're right. Not having to then fight for trying to, you know, something that my son used to say to me was, I'm trying to be who you want me to be, Mum.
Oh, wow.
Because as a parent, we quite often have this expectation of our children.
Right. Right.
And we have to let that expectation go, because by having the expectation, then the child is always trying to, like, think and feel that they have to meet that expectation.
Right. Right.
And this is where then the child then suffers from anxiety and depression, because they can never feel they're doing the right thing because of an expectation.
Match up. They never match up. And so how did this impact you when you fell in love again? You know, because you're skeptical, you're going through your own self-evaluation, esteem issues. You're looking at your son saying, hey, who can I trust to bring back into this life? Who can I trust? Who can hold me? Who can make me feel complete? How did you re-engage yourself in finding love?
One of the biggest things was, the biggest thing that I did before I met a man was I did everything that I never would have before. Hmm. So, for example, I would never have taken myself to a motel and stayed there overnight. So I did it.
Wow.
I would never have got on a bus and gone on a wine tour by myself. So I did it.
Wow.
I completely stepped out of all of my comfort zones and stepped into more and more and more of who I was authentically. And really accepting that that was okay. And the more that I did that, the more that I found myself, then I met the love of my life, my husband. We've been now been together for 19 years. We've been married for 16 years, and we have a beautiful son together. And he accepts me no matter what. And we quite often have a bit of a joke, because the person even that he married 16 years ago is not who I am today. Mm-hmm. But I am who I am today because I have his support and because I have his love.
Right, right.
And one of the biggest defining factors was when I finally introduced my son to my now husband, Hayden is my son's name, I introduced him one afternoon. We all went out because my husband had a son as well. So we actually got the boys together at the same time. Mm. And we went and had a picnic. That night, my son was in the shower and he looked at me and he looked up at me and he said, Mummy, he said, I like him. Oh. And I said, do you, darling? And he said, yes, Mummy. He's not going to hurt me and he's not going to hurt you either.
Oh, wow.
That was the moment that I knew that my son was okay with me being with a man, being with another man. Mm-hmm. And it was his words that I knew that I could move on in my life.
Right.
But knowing that my son could trust him, that meant everything to me.
Absolutely. So now, how is your older son? How is he adjusting to life as a 20-year-old? I mean, there's, you know, in his 20s, there's a whole different set of circumstances. He's looking to build his own family. You know, some things are traumatic that will surface at a later time. Some things we get over and move beyond. How's he doing now?
So he still suffers with depression. He still suffers with those demons. But Hayden also very much, he doesn't know how to get himself out of it. And so because he doesn't know how to get himself out of it, then he's stuck in it. And so I have had to take a back step as his mum, because I know that he is now an adult. He's 23 this year. He has a beautiful daughter of his own. And I have to now look at my son as the adult that he is, right, and not that three-year-old child.
Right, right.
Yeah.
I'm hoping that he accepts the responsibilities of an adult too, because there's a lot. There's a lot of change. And I hope that he finds the wherewithal and the bandwidth to continue to do the work and to be a good father and to show his daughter and be an example of what not to be and what to be to carry forward. So your book, tell us a little bit about your writing process. How did you kind of sit down and decide what you wanted to pour in into the pages of these books?
Well, April, it actually took me 5 years to actually write this book. It had been something that I'd wanted to do for a long time. But I, you know, I was really fearful of being accepted at the time, because obviously still going through a lot of emotions and what have you. And then one day, 3 years ago, I sat there at my computer and I just went, today's the day. I need to write this. And I got a really, I'm very intuitive. Mm-hmm. And the intuitive message that I was given this day was, Paula, there are thousands of parents out there that need this message. It's not actually about you.
Right.
So I was able to remove myself from I guess, the book a little bit and just write. And when I decided to write, I actually wrote 16 chapters in one day.
Wow. Wow. Well, it was cathartic for you, too. It was a lot of therapy, you know, writing that. And when you write things, I tell my brains all the time, when you write it and the hand connects with the pen and the paper, it is a freeing. It opens up space. It opens up capacity. And you cannot pour into something that is clogged and that's stuck. And so, you know, that is a great, great thing that you did. So now, you know, are you out, you know, how are you promoting your book? Are you, you know, book clubs, you know, family groups, organizations, nonprofits? Are those the type of organizations that you're looking at to really promote and support your book?
Yeah, so what I've been doing at the moment, because my book isn't actually a physical book just yet, it's still in the process sort of getting there. So I'm
Are you like downloadable?
I haven't got it to that stage either. I've actually got a Kickstarter fundraiser to help to promote the book through the Kickstarter. So I have a Kickstarter, which I think I sent you already. And I have also been going to women's groups and women's circles. And I've been doing talks like I have to like with you right now, but in person to an audience. And I've been really promoting my book online. So on my website, on my Facebook page. And just really, for me, it's about really getting the word out there about this book, because this book has so much healing within it to everyone that's going to read it, that, you know, it's really important for me to get the message out there so then people know that it's there And if you want to be able to purchase, like pre-purchase the book, so when it's published very soon, then, you know, I can get people the book. But
yeah, absolutely. If we're going to run it here on the edge, we're definitely going to, you know, let people know when it is in print form. It's very important. But the talk up, the trailer, so people know that there is a resource, that you're not alone, that there are parents that struggle with this, and sometimes you can't rewrite the script, you know, but that doesn't mean that you can't turn the page and try to fill the rest of the book with a great story. And you have done that in so many ways, and I'm so proud of you, and I'm so glad that you did not, you know, make that call to go over the cliff. And I know that Hayden is going to come out. He's going to watch this video, and he's going to be proud of his mother, and he's going to be proud of himself, and he's going to look in the mirror and go, wow, look at the man that I have become. You know, I've been able to overcome and adapt. And I'm going to teach my daughter, you know, so many wonderful things about this world and about self-esteem and about love. And so that is so important. And, you know, on this Mother's Day weekend, I think that this is the perfect story to share, and because we care. And, you know, just because somebody has a baby brains, that doesn't make you 100% stellar. It is some work ongoing. And they never go away. 25, 26, 27, they coming back. They wanting some money. They want to stay with you. They want you to babysit. It's an ongoing process. Yeah. So I'm glad that you're hanging in there with him, you know, and I'm glad that you're in love and that you have a 13-year-old son that can see both sides of this. He can see the challenges that his mom went through, but he can also see the joy, and he can also, you know, be aware of the warning signs. So tell my friends how to get in contact with you, Paula, so that they can, again, maybe you have an online group. It'd be great to have, you know, some talk therapy, because everybody's, you know, online now. So you can have some Facebook groups and really kind of share that, go through a few of the pages of the books and give some instruction and really have a real life testimony to what has happened and how you've been able to overcome. I'm sure there's a lot of things that you did not share with us here on the edge, but you can go into a little bit more deeper with one-on-one counseling. So we want to be able to offer that to our brains. How do they get in contact with you, Precious?
So they can get in contact with me through my Facebook page, Dynamics Mind and Body Connection with Paula Darche. I've also got a website, dynamicsmbc.com. So that's two ways that they can get in contact with me. All of my coaching, my book, my Kickstarter is all on my website, as well as my Facebook page as well. So what I really am passionate about is really helping the parents, but really helping the children that are going through the disability and the trauma, because we need to really support them to know that they're not alone either, and that they are okay. Because one of the biggest things that I found with myself going through the trauma is I felt alone. One of the things that I see with my son is that he still feels very alone. And so what I really want to be able to support families with, and that is to let them know that they're not alone and they don't have to stay stuck.
Right. You don't. And you know what? It's okay to be stuck in your feelings. You got to sit there. You got to go through the process. That's a part of healing. But thank you so much for being here on the edge with us and sharing your story this Mother's Day weekend. I'm glad that you're doing well with all this COVID-19. This will be a year to remember in so many ways. So I'm wishing you a happy, happy Mother's Day. And know that the struggle is real, brains, okay? You know, there is no blueprint, no textbook on how to be a parent. It's trial and error. And we do the very best that we can. But if we have one another, sister to sister, comrade to comrade, someone to talk to, someone to love on us and understand, we're going to get through.
We are.
All right. Thank you, baby.
Thank you so much, April.
All right. Bye. Tell everybody down there in Australia, I said, hey.
I will.
All right. Bye-bye. Bye-bye, brain.
Bye, brains.